This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me? Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances. Check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those New Year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO score 8 model. Offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details. Experian.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest. Just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host, the man who's too good to stop for a roadkill deer to check it out, Mitchell Shirk.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman, the 199th episode. That's right, you heard it, the 199th, which means next week is our 200th episode. And guys, I would really love it and appreciate it if you would reach out via Instagram or Facebook at Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast, or if you would send an email to pawoodsmanpodcast@gmail.com. PA, not Pennsylvania, PA Woodsman Podcast. I would really appreciate if you'd send us your questions, send us your comments, anything to contribute to this episode. We'd love to hear you and share that, because we're going to do a fun one. It's going to be story time and question and answer and maybe a little bit extra. I'm not 100% sure, but looking forward to doing that. I've never done an episode like that, and I got to be truthful, I can't believe I made it to 200 episodes, but we did, and you guys have been a part of that, and I thank you so very much for that. It's been a pleasure to get to know a lot of you guys and have you reach out, have you on the podcast, and the folks that I don't know that listen to the show on the regular, I appreciate you. I appreciate you being a listener and a supporter, and I can't thank you guys enough. Hey, this week we're going to get into one of my favorite topics of all time, and that is going to be land management and habitat manipulation. But it's going to be through a significantly different lens than you're used to hearing it. I feel like we have made that topic of discussion very pigeonholed into the world of bigger bucks, bigger deer. And it's very site-specific to things like food plots and hinge cutting and things like that. None of those things are necessarily bad, but there's a bigger picture to look at some of this stuff. And sometimes there's a bigger picture to look at it outside of hunting. Sometimes it's looking at it from the holistic approach of wildlife. Sometimes it's looking at what does the land need for an overall land improvement. And vegetation improvement. Now, the two go hand in hand with wildlife for certain, but there's also some opportunity that you can play the game smart if you own a piece of land and bring in some potential revenue for yourself. There's also a way that if you are ate up with wildlife and you want to have habitat projects completed on your property, maybe you've got invasives and you got problems on your property, having NRCS, having them come out and do some land management projects and get funding for there's plenty of funding opportunities out there for your piece of property to implement some of these projects you might want to, or there's a roundabout way of doing this. And there's a long list of ways that you can go through NRCS and EQIP to get great wildlife management practices completed on your property. So this week's guest, we're speaking with Steve Chilcote, Chilcote Forestry and Realty, and we are going to discuss everything under the sun when it comes to forest management, invasive management, and then working the system to see, can you actually get some funding? Some of these projects cost thousands of dollars, right? And if you can get put on a list and get everything done at a lesser cost for yourself out of pocket, why wouldn't you, if it's going to benefit you, the wildlife, your hunting, your property, everything under the sun? So that's going to be our conversation. This is a good one because it all revolves around forest management plans and balancing ecosystems, and it all leads to better forestry and better hunting. And anybody that wants to, I just saw somebody post a video the other day, and it was not related to the forestry topic. It was related to poultry. You know, right now we have the avian influenza has another big spike, and we're dealing with that. And I heard a farmer say that, you know, a lot of the time you'll hear that avian influenza is blamed upon wild birds. Oh, these ducks and geese and these wild birds bring it in, and that's what we have to deal with. And his comment was, any time that wildlife gets blamed for a problem right off the bat, that's wrong. We shouldn't be blaming wildlife in some of our practices and stuff. And that just resonated with me, because when you think about it from an agricultural standpoint, you think about it from a a forest management standpoint. You think about some of the things that mankind has done in its time to ruin ecosystems with all the invasives that it's brought over, because it's going to make our world a better place. You know, there's so much opportunity for improvement out there, and that improvement can be just as simple as changing plant makeup. And just because it doesn't fit the mold of some deer manager with their hinge cuts doesn't mean it's a bad practice. There's a lot of great practices out there, and there's ways of slicing the pie that can benefit in many different cases. And I think being narrow-minded in shoot a big buck, that can really hurt yourself in the long run in certain cases if you're not looking at it from the big picture. So let you guys take it from there and listen to this week's episode with Steve. I really enjoyed this one. This was one that fueled me up and gave me some passion and some fire, because this is the stuff I want. Like, this is the type of conversation, and this is why I wanted to continue with the podcast for a long time, because this is what I'm passionate about. And I love these conversations. And if you're a landowner, I think you will too. I think there's some great information in here for you. And you have the opportunity to reach out to Steve at any time and get him to help you, because he is a great resource, a knowledgeable resource, and is willing to talk. He puts his phone number out here on this show for you to reach out to him and call him with your property needs. And he is an asset. So let's get to this episode. Shout out to partners, Radix Hunting. If you are looking to gear up this spring, whether that is a Monarch blind, a pop-up blind, the soft shell blind, or the hard shell blind, they also have Virtus feeders, trail cameras. I can't say enough good positive things about trail cameras, tree stands, gear, you name it under the sun. Radix has hunting gear at a price point that I don't think can be beat, that especially when it comes to the quality they give. Made by great hunters for great hunters. Check out RadixHunting.com and Huntworth. Guys, right now we just launched a new lightweight hoodie, the Camden lightweight hoodie in Huntworth. There is a sale going on until March 30th. You can get somewhere in that 20% off ballpark on a lot of Huntworth gear. There's a lot more solid colors available if you're liking that stuff for casual wear. I know I do. I would encourage you to check out the Durham pants and the Camden, or a couple of the other hoodies that are out there that have a built-in head net. Great for turkey season, guys. Comfortable pants, mobility, built-in head net, great camo patterns. I like Disruption. You got Vertec and you got a couple others out there. Check out huntworthgear.com. Let's get to this episode with Steve. All right, joining us on this week's show is a friend of mine and a returning guest, Mr. Steve Chilcote. Steve, how you been?
I've been good. I'm getting real busy this time of year. Got my first tick bite yesterday. the robins are back. I noticed 2 days ago I went outside and I heard robins fighting over territory.
Yeah, I've been seeing robins from my office desk here. I'm itching to get back out and do a little bit more outside stuff. We've been trying to connect for a podcast here for quite a while, but you've been fighting off the good old winter season bug here.
You got the creeping crud. But a week ago, I couldn't talk at all. So I had the flu, and then I got something in my throat on top of that, and then it creeped into my lungs, and it won't leave.
Yeah, no fun. Well, hopefully some fresh air will fix you up here. So, Steve, you've been busy. I know we were talking before we started here. You caught the bug because you were at the Great American Outdoor Show with a booth, and you've been doing a couple other shows this year. Give me a little bit of a synopsis of what your winter has been like from the business end of things, because I think some things have changed in your business that you've doing since the last time you were on the show here, and I wouldn't mind catching up with you in that regard.
Well, winter can be really, really slow. Usually what happens is people call me either right after deer season because they didn't have a good hunting season. That's when I count on people to call me, and then we can discuss their property, try to figure out what's going on with it, and then we schedule a visit. And I know a lot of guys like to go in the dead of winter so they can see deer tracks, but it's just so cotton picking cold. This year was just the coldest weather. It was always windy. Did you notice that? It was windy. And
oh, absolutely. Miserable.
Freezing
cold.
And I'm getting too old for that crap. I like it when it's like 60 out.
I can't say I blame you. Kind of like it is right now.
So now that I'm feeling a little stronger after the flu, I've got a lot of people that I've been putting off that I needed to go see. Now, some of those people are hunting land clients. Some are strictly food plots. They need help with their food plots. And then some are forest management plan people that were funded for a plan and need me to write it for them. I'm going to Easton this weekend and get started on that. I already know what the guy's problem is. They have terrible automotive out there. And so I've got that guy. I finished up a big forest management plan in West Virginia, which I kind of like because in West Virginia, they don't have a lot of agriculture down there. So they put a lot more farm bill money into the forestry end of things. So I have a client down there. He wants to do everything. Like, he's like a kid in a candy store when he looks at the list of equipped projects that you can put in for. And it took me a couple of months to write his plan and going back and forth with NRCS. Writing those plans is not for the faint of heart. A lot of foresters don't want to do them because you're dealing with bureaucrats and you have to make them happy, mm-hmm. Okay? And you got to fill out forms, which I hate forms. I'd rather just sit down and write something off the top of my head. I hate being pigeonholed into these templates that they have, but they make you use them.
And I'm no stranger to that because in my line of work in agriculture, we do a lot of that with NRCS and in different types of plans, whether that's a 590 nutrient management plan, a conservation plan, ag E&S mm-hmm. plans. And you brought up EQIP. You know, there's a lot of funding out there, and I'm very familiar with that on the agricultural side, and I know it's available on the forestry side. And I think that kind of segues really well into, you know, there's probably landowners that'll listen to this and probably don't even know what we're talking about, Steve, and don't even know that some of this funding is available, don't even know who to contact. And obviously, you know, we say when it comes to stuff like this, call Steve and he'll set you up. But try to baseline 101 when it comes to what is actually available out there for landowners that own timber. You know, it's timber that's probably in clean and green. They're utilizing it as either an investment or a hunting property. And you know, they want to maximize their potential, their property. But, man, maybe they also probably don't want to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars out of pocket to do some of the habitat and reclamation stuff and forestry process. So what actually is available out there? And how, where do you even begin when somebody has a question to bring you onto their farm?
The first step is to take a look and see if you have a problem, because NRCS and EQIP is created to address a resource concern. So on your end of things, when you're in agriculture, you probably have your resource concern is probably erosion or excess nutrients, pollution, things like that, right? And in the forest end of things, you still have the same type of things. But what we have mostly, almost all of my forest management plans are, they will include addressing invasive plants. So let me back up just one step. When you start this process, NRCS wants you to get a forest management plan. And in that plan, you'll have a list of EQIP projects, EQIP funded projects that you can do. You can apply for funding to do all those. You can also apply for funding to get the plan written. Now, recently in Pennsylvania, you have a situation where, for whatever reason, funding or priorities, they aren't really funding the plan itself very often. And so what I've been doing recently is just writing a plan privately and being paid directly from the landowner. And I try to write it in such a way that it's suitable for an NRCS guy to go out in the woods and say, take my plan and say, okay, we're going to let you apply for funding to do this, that, and the other thing, which could be TSI, spraying brush, spraying things like stilgrass, planting trees, etc. So the EQIP number for your plan is 106. So you, like, if you wanted to try to get funding for a plan, you would go down to the NRCS office in whatever county you're in, where your land is in. You get a farm bill number, real easy, you know, it's a one-page form. You get that at the Farm Service Agency, which is usually in the same building, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I have seen it when they're in different locations, but they're usually in the same location.
Usually.
So you take your form, you fill it out, you get a farm number, unless you already have one, and then you take it over to NRCS and say, you know, I want to apply for funding for a forest management plan. And that allows me to write a really elaborate, detailed plan, cruise your timber. There's enough money there that can pay for my time to do all that. And then you can take that forest management plan and all the steps that are in there, you can apply for funding to do the projects. So let's say I go to your property and you need pre-commercial thinning, let's say. There's a bunch of junk in there because it's high grade, but there's not quite enough material to do a harvest. So you could get money to pay a guy to go in there and cut those trees down. And then they have different levels of that. You know, is it real heavy? Is it mechanized, et cetera? And then I might see some stilgrass. So I want to put in for 314 and 315, which is brush management and herbaceous weed management. And then that allows you to hire somebody to spray that stuff and eradicate it. And then you can be reimbursed for the cost up to a certain amount. They have numbers assigned to all these projects about what they should cost, and then they reimburse them.
So the forest management plans, for one thing, not any Tom, Dick, or Harry can write a forest management plan. It has to be a certified individual.
I'm what they call a TSP.
So
Right. You're
a TSP, and you can write a forest management plan. And we're talking about invasives and timber stand improvement and stuff. And, you know, there's probably folks that are listening to this right now that understand where you and I are coming from. You know, we're kind of getting in the weeds a little bit of this, but let's back up a little bit, because you and I know, we've had these conversations many times, that landowners and deer hunters and wildlife hunters, enthusiasts and everything else, they get these ideas from maybe other sources of information, whether it's social media, a YouTube channel, or something like that, and they want to do something. They're just thinking narrow-mindedly. I want to do something for deer hunting on my property, or I want to improve the turkey hunting on my property, or whatever. So they come up with all these great ideas, and then they'll call you, and there's kind of a little bit of you bridging the gap, and hey, I know what you're trying to do here, but let's look at the big picture, and let's also see what is the lowest hole in the bucket of your property to plug. And that's where you're coming in with some of these other things that people don't think about. I think the thing a lot of people just want to talk about is hinge cutting trees, right? That's a common one. Hey, let's just go hinge cut a bunch of trees because it's going to be better for the deer hunting. And that might
be so-and-so on YouTube says it's good.
Exactly. So can you kind of branch off of that a little bit, Steve? So you're talking about forest management plans, and you talked a little bit about invasive brush, TSI. Let's go back when you're working with somebody and somebody says, hey, I want you to come out my property. These are my goals. How do you break that down?
Well, yeah, that's the first thing, is I need to find out what a landowner's goal for the property is. Because I have some people who just care about timber. They're not big hunters. They hunt a little bit or not at all. And they want to increase timber value, or they want to harvest, but they're not sure you know, how they should go about that. Unfortunately, most people sell their timber directly to a logger or a sawmill, and then they're kind of shocked at what happens, and they don't like it, and, you know, it's too late to do anything about it. They should have called me in the first place, right? So, I think I lost track of what...
So, like, you know, somebody calls you, and they're saying, hey, I'm... Let's think about this from the scope of deer hunting. I'm narrow-minded, man. I want to do something for making the deer hunting better on my property. But I've heard about this NRCS and these forest management plans. What does that mean, and what can I actually do that's going to help my deer? How do you direct conversations like that?
Well, for one thing, the NRCS doesn't care about how your deer hunting is, okay?
Sure.
But they care about wildlife habitat in general. So we can... we can work within their framework. Let's say they're real hot on right now. Everybody wants pollinator habitat. So what that is, of course, is there's wildflowers when you plug the computer in here. And we can make that work. They don't want to pay for a food plot in Pennsylvania, but they will pay for a pollinator plot. And then we can use plants that I know that deer are going to like at one time of the year or another, and try to use native plants. And we can get some of that paid for that way. The other thing that we have is brush management. So if you want to take out an invasive plant, like I'm doing a timber sale for a guy right now, his whole place is covered in honeysuckle. Because way back, the Game Commission gave him honeysuckle plants, and he planted them, and they just spread. They're all over the property. So now we got a problem. Okay, I'm going to do this timber sale, and it's going to blow up and thicken even further with honeysuckle, and he really needs that taken care of before we harvest it. And you could do it after, but then you're tripping over tops trying to get in and out of there, right? So... he could apply for EQIP. He could also apply for CSP, which is Conservation Stewardship Program. That's quicker. It's usually more available and easier to get. And the difference is the way the payments are. With EQIP, you have a bunch of different things you can do. And then they all pay a certain amount per acre or per tree if you're planting trees. And CSP, it addresses a problem that is a resource concern. So if there's some kind of a problem, like a really bad invasive infestation, okay, or really bad erosion or something like that, then you're going to probably go get ranked higher. We can talk about ranking too. But you get ranked a little higher and you stand a better chance of getting money. CSP, if you're already working on something, you've already been trying to do some spraying for stiltgrass, for instance, things like that, you could apply and you can get $20,000 over a period of 5 years. So you get $4,000 a year, and you you can use that money to work on your property. And they usually just come out, see that you've done the work. You know, they see what work needs to be done, and they come out to see what's been done. You have to have a plan, a written plan that says this is the way we're going to use this money. And they'll give you $4,000 a year. It's kind of like CRP in a way.
That makes a lot of sense there. So when you start getting into, so you had made a good point earlier. You're talking about it works really well if somebody starts from the beginning, and hiring somebody like yourself that can come out and see the lowest hole in the bucket, write a plan, and come up with a chronological step A through Z of implementing this. Now, what happens, Steve? You know, guys get excited. They own pieces of property. They get these great envisions of what's going to happen. Man, I've got so much overstory, and I really want to cut that overstory back and get some new growth because I want to create wildlife thickets and a diversity of understory, you know, and brush and things like that. And they do that, and unfortunately, the seed base on their property, without them knowing, was invasives. And then they have this explosion of a major problem. Can you still get a forest management plan or like a reclamation plan, or what happens afterwards when you have a situation like that where, the lack of a better term, it hits the fan, and now you're trying to fix a problem?
Yeah, that's usually what they like, actually, at NRCS. They want to go to a really screwed up property, and, you know, it's a little bit ass-ackwards because, for instance, I have a guy right now that I wrote a plan for. He's putting in for some spraying and planting trees and some TSI. He sold all his oak trees. They're all gone. So I said, well, where is all the money that you got from this timber sale? He spent all the money. Okay. And I can't get that excited about helping a guy like that. Like, why didn't you set aside 10, 20% of what you got? I know he got 100,000, 120,000 for his timber. So why not set aside $20,000 to put back into the land later? But he didn't do that. And the unfortunate thing about the NRCS EQIP program is that if you're a guy who's been taking really good care of your property and everything's great, you can't get any funding going forward to help you because you don't have a resource concern anymore because you took care of it, you know?
Sure.
And that's where CSP is better for a guy like that. Okay. Because you don't need that big problem to solve. It's more geared towards ongoing, you know, people that are constantly every year working on their land. I have a guy right now that we had gypsy moth kill, did a salvage harvest, and he's just blowing up with stilt grass, and then he's got mile a minute climbing up the stilt grass. So I went to NRCS and I said, hey, this guy, I've been asking for a redo, you know, an updated version of his forest management plan. I could write a new one because I wrote one like 20 years ago for this guy. And they told me that they just didn't have money for plans, so wanting to do CSP there. So we applied for CSP, and I think we'll be able to do some spraying.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. And you brought up a great point about people looking at the end result, the end dollar, and utilizing that other ways. There's definitely a lot of that where it's take the best, let the rest mentality, and not invest back into that landscape. And I think it's different mindsets that have that. Folks that have a hunting-oriented goal or have a wildlife-oriented goal, I think are sometimes more understanding and more willing to put aside. But when you think about managing forest for whether it's for forest management or for wildlife management, do you see, I don't know how I want to word this question, Steve, but bear with me, do you think it's there's like a process or a percentage that you should look at in reinvesting when you do things like that, or like, do you have a formula in your mind that you like to implement on a lot of properties to like allow maybe income to come from timber harvest but also reinvest in that land to keep improving it to achieve your goals?
Yeah, I have clients who are pretty wealthy. So whatever I suggest, they'll mull it over. They'll take a look at the numbers and they'll say, yeah, go ahead. I have a guy that doesn't matter what I say, he'll do it. Doesn't matter what it costs. Mm-hmm. It's kind of fun, really, because I can do whatever I want, you know.
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
Dreaming of owning a hunting property, small farm, or remote homestead? Or maybe it's time to sell and move on to your next adventure. Whatever your dream is, Steve Choco and Base Camp Country Real Estate can make it happen. Base Camp Country Real Estate land professional Steve Choco is dedicated to providing unparalleled service in the land real estate market. With national advertising power that turns for sale into sold fast, visit us online at chocoforester.com or call Steve today at 814-360-4510. Again, 814-360-4510.
And so we're going to put in some orchards for him this year, and that's an expensive thing to do because we're going to put 50 trees in, and they all need cages and mulch and stakes, tubes, and you know, it's a lot of labor. I got to bring a bunch of guys. But it's nice when a guy can afford to do that. Now, I talked to a guy yesterday in the Poconos, and this happens quite often, is that he bought a piece of land. It's 125 acres. And he pretty much spent all his money, okay? And then he wants to have a food plot. Well, try making a food plot at the Poconos. It's really expensive.
Sure. Okay?
It's not impossible. But I have to de-rock the site. There's no suitable soil. And I have to put a truckload of lime and a truckload of mulch and fertilizer and get a food plot going for him. But it's going to cost tens of thousands of dollars to get it all done. So fortunately, he's got enough timber there. Even though it's been worked over kind of hard, I'm going to try to get somebody that likes pulpwood in there to look at it. I also have a logger that I really like that they can move a lot of firewood, and they understand what I'm looking for with these jobs because they've done over and over again, cleared food plot for me. You know, usually we try to put the landing where we want the food plot, and then because they got to clear that anyway, and then we go in and de-stump it and go ahead with our food plot. But anyhow, this guy I think has enough timber that I can get the money for the food plot out of the timber. So I start with what I think the food plot's going to cost. He doesn't have a cover problem because he's got two swamps on it. There's plenty of cover there. And so we know where the deer are hanging out. I just have to pull them out of there to a food plot. And I think it's probably going to run about 20 grand to put that in at least. Mm-hmm. That would be minimal. But he's going to have the only field anywhere around there that's got really nice forage in it. And so he's going to own the deer. He's got state land across from him. He's got gating lands. And he's next to one of those big developments out there. So they hold a lot of deer, actually. The deer kind of hang around the outside edge of that. And I think a lot of people put feeders out. They go in there and get corn in the wintertime.
So, obviously, it takes a lot of planning ahead, right? Planning ahead for projects like that.
I just spent the afternoon just kind of sitting and writing what I saw, what my recommendations are, the prescription for the forest, and the prescription and the techniques that we would use to do his food plot for him. And then the next step would be for me to contract with him to do a timber sale. And then I'll get loggers out there and try to find somebody that'd be interested in that timber.
I want to backtrack a little bit, Steve. You had talked about somebody that wanted to put an orchard in. We talked about invasive management. You talked about pollinator ways of getting clearings onto the land and getting funded. Mostly those are the things like, what is there a laundry list of potential things landowners can get funding on for their projects? We're talking about fixing resource concerns, but are there ways to utilize state government funding that will aid in a food plot? You talked about contracting money certain ways, like certain habitat projects, the things, the buzzwords that we have in our mind when it comes to improving wildlife habitat. Are there ways around it, or a list of things that you can enroll in to use on your property?
Well, NRCS is Farm Bill money, and it's administered through the states and down to the counties. It's at the county level, but it's a federal funded operation, the NRCS. And there are so many different things that you can apply for. I can't even think of them. I have roads and trails. I have fixing up trails and putting water bars in and broad-based dips to keep erosion down. So your resource concern would be erosion. You have pollinators, you have the herbicide work, the TSI work. And then down in West Virginia, we can put in for forest openings. So we put in for that, and we're going to use that to create our food plots. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can get, you never know if you're going to actually get the funding or not until they rank everything, look at how much money that they've been allocated by Washington. And, once they get, say $5 million into the county to do this stuff, then they dole it out accordingly. And I can't predict what they're going to prioritize. I can sort of guess. Invasive species is pretty hot. Pollinator habitat is really hot. Erosion is always there. But they don't like to fund a food plot. So you can never say that it's a food plot. Okay. So if you're putting in for EQIP, you want to call it, you want to use the right vernacular, You want to call it a wildlife opening. And then you want to plant shrub. You want to do shrub site prep. That's another EQIP funded item that you can put in your plan. So that would include clearing a spot to put the shrubs. Okay. Then you can put the shrubs in and you could apply for protection as well. So you can put a earproof fence around that, tubes on them, whatever. And then you have your forest opening, you plant clover all around that stuff. And, you can't put in an orchard, but what you can do is put in, native trees and shrubs. So that's no problem. If we want to have an orchard, you don't want to say that you're putting in apples and pears, depending on what state you're in. Some might pay for that. But if you go for elderberry and viburnum, American cranberry bush, and things that belong here anyway, and you're trying to get them back into the forest, that stuff goes into every one of my forest management plans because, in my talk that I run around and give, I'm talking about how the forest around here in the 1700s, a man could just walk out there and collect nuts, collect berries, shoot some deer. There were elk around. There were even bison just west of here. They had a woodland bison, There was plenty of meat, fruit, and nuts out there. And now you're hard pressed to go out there and find anything to eat. And the same with the wildlife. There's no fruit bearing shrubs and trees except for oaks. Now we're losing our oaks. folks are going downhill like crazy. And that's where trying to replace forage and fruit-bearing shrubs and browse for the wintertime is critical right now if you want to have good deer hunting. So when I get a call from a guy that just wants a deer hunting plan, that's so much easier for me because I know exactly what to tell them. I know what's going to work. You tell them what everything's going to cost, and it's pretty quick and simple to write a plan for a guy like that. He just wants to improve his hunting and needs a little guidance. The NRCS plans are really involved.
Sure.
Cost a lot more.
That makes a lot of sense, and I'm glad you brought this up. I've been saying this for a while, and I think this is probably a good conversation for you and I to have on here. So, you know, with my job in agriculture, the growers I work with, I sit down every winter, and I have meetings with growers, and we come up with plans for crop management from the fertility side of things, from the chemistry side of things, you know, chronological orders to try to make growers as efficient and profitable as possible. And this past year, in the area that I worked in central Pennsylvania, we had a little bit of a drought. And that drought condition really exacerbated deer pressure, deer browsing, and had a high loss in both corn and soybeans. And it's one of those things that each and every year, the complaint from my growers is astoundingly larger, and they're speaking louder to the fact that deer pressure in their crop fields is getting worse and worse, and it's making it harder and harder for growers to be profitable. And a lot of the time when people get into that topic of conversation, they think lethal measures. Right away, they think they just got to shoot deer, they got to shoot deer. And don't get me wrong, there are places that could use a couple more tags filled. But one of the things that I've been stressing, I think, is a big problem is exactly what you just brought up. The forest makeup that we had 25 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago is drastically different than we have now. Yeah. And invasive species do create cover. It creates poor cover, but it creates cover and sanctuaries on properties. And adjacent to that being farmland, we're feeding deer the same way we're feeding cattle. We're providing food sources for them to come and browse, and we're not relying on native vegetation to supply the carrying capacity of the herd. And I think that is a huge issue that we have in this state and probably a lot of other states.
If there's nothing to eat in the woods and you got a soybean field, then they're just going to eat soybeans every single day. The other thing is, do you think farmers are using, you know, kind of get off into another subject, but you're more of an expert in this than I am. Are they using deer as an excuse for poor farming, like soil health issues?
Some. I would say there's a percentage that there's maybe some less advanced farming practices that are being put in place, and deer are kind of a crutch in that sense. I like to think a lot of the growers that work with the company that I work at are trying to be on the cutting edge of agriculture and try to push their limits and think outside the box and use the best practices. So there's a mix, right? That's a tough question to answer because I know exactly where you're going with that. And it's a difficult conversation to have because, you know, on one hand, you talk about soil health and stuff. Soil health, the first thing that I think about is cover crops. Cover crops, keeping the soil covered, no-till, minimum erosion, things like that. And those are all really, really great things. The issue I face on an annual basis is that the value of the crops that growers are planting, mostly corn, soybeans, wheat, small grains, things like that, the value of those crops have not really changed in the last 10, 20 years. Yet, our investment to grow those crops have increased 100, 200, 250%.
Yeah, I've seen charts where the you know, if you go back to the early part of the 1900s, a man could go out and make a living farming, could buy land, and farm it and make a living. But you can't do that today. And then, you know, when you look at the input costs are going up like this, you know, just straight up. And the profits are still down here like bottom feeding, you know. And the only people making money are John Deere and the fertilizer companies, right?
You're 100% right. So,
that's why I try to get people away from fertilizers and pesticides, okay? When we're doing our food plots, the first thing I do is put compost in, and then I've been experimenting with different things, and I've had good luck with these called Holganics. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of them?
Absolutely.
They're down your way.
Yep.
So what I've been doing is put the compost down and then inoculate it with that and till it all under and plant it. And I've had some really good looking food plots right through the droughts and all, you know, by using a multi-species cover crop and the organic style of farming. Sometimes you gotta till, sometimes you gotta spray, but if you can just try to avoid that, I think you're gonna come out better in the long run because your soil is gonna be more resilient.
100%, Steve.
But we had that drought last year. I talked to a guy. He had 500 acres of soybeans planted. He had to replant it all.
Wow.
And that wasn't deer. That was just the weather.
Yeah, we had a lot of issues like slug feeding early season that created some issues.
Yeah, it was real wet early, mm-hmm. and then we had a drought, right? So you had slugs, and then you had no water.
And I think what I wanted to kind of bring into the spectrum when you're talking about implementing soil health practices into farming. I love doing that, and I want to do that as much as possible. The biggest fear I have is understanding the potential, the amount that you should invest in on an annual basis and still maintain profitability. And I'll give you an example. I'll go to farms and do soil fertility recommendations. And I've been on farms that have really, really low pHs. And the simple solution is, hey, let's put lime on. But if you start adding up the acres and you add up the price of lime, you can go broke in year one trying to get all the lime on stone there. So what I tell guys is, hey, let's look at the investment cost it's going to take. Let's choose a slice of that pie that we can invest in annually and chip away at it little by little and slowly see the long-term benefits of applying limestone and getting your pH to the appropriate level. And I think that concept when it comes to soil health practices and weaning off of commercial fertilizer, commercial pesticides, things like that, I think it has to be that exact same way, because you could really land yourself and a lot of growers into a really hard rock between a laying yourself between a rock and a hard place if you dive full force into a lot of stuff and you don't come up with a exactly what you're talking about with our forestry plans. If we come up with a plan that's incremental in steps to wean off and yet maintain a cash flow through an operation,
yeah,
that's the biggest thing.
Weaning is a good word, because you can't go from the hydroponic style farming straight into no-till organic right away. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work, right? I was talking to a farmer. He had me out there to look at his deer situation, but I'm looking at his ground, and I said, man, you got some sheet erosion going on here. And he said, yeah, but, you know, we just had a big rainstorm. It was like 2 inches. And it all, you could see that it all ran off. It ran right off the surface of his ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, like, he started talking about how he was getting ready to spray Roundup again for the second time. And I'm looking at the ground. I don't see one weed anywhere. But it was time to spray, you know? Mm. I said, do you ever think about maybe just take this one section over here and put a good nitrogen cover crop on and let it go over the winter and into the spring and test your soil? Maybe you can cut back on that nitrogen. And if you cut back on nitrogen, you won't have the pH problem that you have, because you know, nitrogen fertilizer is going to lower your pH.
And absolutely.
I noticed in food plots, once I, you know, I'll start out with a 4.8, I'll get it up to 6.5, and then you test it 5 years later, it's still 6.5.
Exactly.
In a food plot, because I'm not constantly pumping that fertilizer in there and taking all the vegetation off, and then you have, it goes all winter fallow, and none of those things are good. I think that people who put in food plots, I think you're doing a good thing for the earth.
Mm.
And it's more than just attracting deer to shoot at, you know. I think you're doing a lot of good for the wildlife in general, and a lot of good for the soil.
I'd like to circle back to a topic that we brushed on when you were talking about that place in the Poconos that you were working on, 125 acres, and they want to put in a food plot. And I see this often that, and I think it's a little bit of pressure from the whitetail hunting world that, you know, food plots, food plots, food plots. And hey, I love food plots. I really do. But let's face it, some of the forests that we have in Pennsylvania, in central and northern Pennsylvania, you get up into that Pocono region, you get into the PA wilds, and there's private land up there. It almost seems in some cases that we're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole when it comes to planting herbaceous food plots. And there's got to be other ways that we can have successful goals around deer hunting, but kind of cater it towards the makeup of the property that we have. And I was wondering if you could elaborate some thoughts on that when it comes to managing outside of food plots and yet having good food sources outside. You talked about a couple of things, but maybe you can elaborate more on that.
Well, managing your forest properly so that you constantly have, you know, if you just hold your hands out straight, you got to have something to eat below your shoulders, okay? So up there, that could be blueberries even. You know, they'll nip the little tiny buds off the blueberries, and they can live on that. And when it gets right down to it, when it's really cold and there's nothing else to eat, they might even eat beech buds from the beech sprouts coming up. If they're eating those, you got some hungry deer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got way too many deer. But it's amazing what they find to eat. But you have to get sunlight down to the forest floor where it can grow something. You know, all the native plants that are grown, even ferns, you know, deer will, I haven't really discovered what species of fern that they do this with, but I noticed in the wintertime they'll dig through the organic layer and they'll eat fern roots.
Yeah, it's like the brassicas of the Northwoods, I've heard it called.
Yeah. So there's a lot of native stuff out there, and there's nothing that a deer would rather have. I just had this conversation with a logger. You know, he goes, we got to spray these gum stumps, right? Black gum.
Oh, black gum is such a great browse source.
I said, you don't want to spray them. Let the deer eat them. They absolutely love them.
Yeah, they'll eat them to the point they'll die anyway.
Oh, yeah. The very best thing a guy could do to feed deer is take a chainsaw out in wintertime and just start dropping trees for TSI. And, you know, concentrate on things that the deer like, you know, oaks, gum, and red maple is a good one.
Absolutely. But before you do that, make sure you know and identify and understand the makeup of what you do. And if you don't, talk to somebody like Steve before you make yourself a mess.
Yeah, I mean, a guy could pay me for a day to come out and just mark, you know, a lot of times I'll mark lead trees. Don't cut this one. I cringe when I see these guys on YouTube. I've been watching a lot of YouTube since I've been homesick so much. I'm like, oh my God, you know, you see these guys cut these beautiful white oaks down for a hinge cut, right? And I'm like, all right, you know, like, you can argue that I don't care about timber, I just want deer cover, but like, how dare you cut that beautiful white oak down for a deer to lay under?
Mm. I think that's a great point. I think we've gotten ourselves to the point where we've pigeonholed ourselves and narrow-minded ourselves so much to thinking about deer, deer, deer. And deer are very important. They're very near and dear to me. But the health of a forest and creating browse, there's a lot more ways to skin a cat. And I think it all comes down to nearsighted goals versus long-term potential, because I think long-term potential in creating diversity is always going to win over nearsighted hinge cutting and quick browse pockets that the deer are going to overwhelm and over browse and create a problem that might involve invasives coming into. And that's a big problem that I see occasionally. I'm sure you do too.
Yeah, invasives ruin all your plans. I can tell you, you know, I've had places just blow up at still grass because the seed bank was there. And I didn't mention the one thing I forgot to mention before. Prescribed fire is going to, you know, over the next 20 years, it's going to be a lot more common on private land.
Can you elaborate on that as to why and how that's going to be implemented?
Well, I went to the... there's a Professor Cry at Penn State has been, he's the fire ecology professor over there, does a lot of research, and he started a training program last year where you can go and you can get written training, like book training, a little bit of field training, and then they've come up with a plan where a guy like myself or a guy like you, better for the younger guys, because you have time to get all your training done and you're still young enough to physically go out and do the work. But you can get trained up now to where you can start performing prescribed fire without liability. Or you can do it for other people on their property and get insurance. Okay. But I have a client right now, he was all worried about it. I said, you really got a burn in here, because he had the, what we call an oak heath forest. You know, it's oak in the overstory, mostly white oak, chestnut oak, and then blueberry understory and laurel and rhododendron. Those are all fire adapted plants. They love to burn. They're very flammable and they benefit and prevent other things from living there through fire, okay? So, his neighbor accidentally started a fire burning trash. He went home and an ember got out and started a fire. And it burned over onto some state game lands, and then they brought in a helicopter and put it out. But he said, hey, you were right. I looked over there. That fire went right along the ground. And it killed all those little birch whips that were there. Just like he said, you know, he goes, I'm going to do this on my property next year. And they did a 1 acre piece and it went really well. It's real easy. No problems. So now they're going to start doing bigger and bigger pieces. He's got, when we logged his place, we put a lot of roads and trails. So he's got these burn breaks all over the place. And there's no way that fire is going to get out. Right about now, today would be a perfect day to do a burn. It's not windy and it's dry. Yesterday I saw a forest fire ahead of me when I was coming out 80. And I got up there, big traffic jam. Somebody had flicked a cigarette out the window, obviously, and it burned from there away from 80 back into the woods. And I was thinking, man, this would be a good day to have a fire. Because the soil's moist and the leaves are dry, you know. That's what you want.
And while I'm not very well versed in my ability to apply fire as far as knowledge and how to do it, that's one thought that's come to my mind when I think about the forest makeup in the central part of the state, northern part of the state, and Poconos, things like that, where you're talking about it's really, really tough to have an effective food plot. But how great would it be, and I've heard, I think it's Dr. Marcus Lashley talk about this, he dubs it as bow stand burns, these small little secluded areas of burns, and making a quality wildlife opening of natural herbaceous growth, and that creates an awesome opportunity for pinch points and deer hunting session, and no fertilizer, no major clearing.
Yeah, you could burn a spot like that pretty easily, and just with a rake, a leaf blower. You know, you got to pick a good day where it's not windy. That's the most important thing. And then you could actually take that spot and throw some chicory down, some oats, and it'll sprout up. There's nothing works better for new growth than a fern. All kinds of little green stuff is going to come up. Green briar, and another thing that loves fire is sassafras.
Mm.
And deer will actually eat sassafras when it's brand new and it's coming up. The other thing is, like, if you burn blueberry, some of these blueberry bushes are 100 years old and they're just not making a lot of fruit anymore. But when you burn them, it refreshes their fruit-making ability.
It almost like top kills them, and then they resprout with some new life, right?
Nice and fresh, yeah. A lot more energy coming up. And that's all food for wildlife.
Absolutely. This has been an extremely fun conversation, Steve, and I want to be mindful of your time and mindful of your voice, because I know you're still overcoming being sick, but I think it'd be a good point to put a pin in it and kind of revisit this at another point in time. A lot of good information here. Before we close this one out, is there anything you'd like to close us out with? And please make sure you do your due diligence in letting people know how they can get a hold of you, a little bit about what you do as from the business side, and how that might benefit them from this conversation.
Well, if people would like to work with NRCS, I'm a technical service provider, and you start out by going to NRCS, getting registered, and applying for that. Apply for a TAP 106 plan, and then you can call me up, and I'll write that for you if you get funded. If you find that that's too frustrating, or you don't want to work with the government, I can write a plan privately. If you just want me to come out, and like this guy yesterday, he's about to close on his property, and he's just diving right in. He wants to make it better for hunting. So he had me out for the day, and you can pay me by the day, and I'll walk the property. Now, he paid for a cruise. So we actually cruised the timber. If I come out and I look at your property and I can see there's no timber there, there's no sense in me cruising. I can just look at it and say, well, you got about 1,000 feet of crappy pulp, you know, like what we call scragwood, and then the rest of it pulp, and, you know, it's probably worth $300 an acre. And the best thing to do is cut the rest of it down and start over. But if there's timber, I'd really like to know how much there is. So then we cruise it and run it through the computer, and it tells me approximately how much is there. And then I can use that to see how much money is available, you know, who could possibly come in here and work on it, as far as loggers, sawmills that might want particular types of wood. And then, you know, we have the Base Camp Realty in Pennsylvania now. I brought them in from Indiana and set up a brokerage. So if you're looking to buy or sell, you can give me a call and we can get that on the market. I like Base Camp more than any of the other big land brokerages because of their website. It's really easy to use. They're really a great company to work with. They have leasing as well. So if you have land that you don't hunt on and you want to lease it to get some extra income, you can do that. I'll tell you the easiest way to utilize my services, just give me a call. We can get, you know, with Onyx now, we can get your land up on the computer. Costs nothing to talk on the phone. I can talk all day about, you know, looking at aerial photos and talking about your property and what's going on with it.
Except when you're overcoming the flu.
Yeah. But still, you know, I've just been talking to people this winter, just whispering, you know. Yeah, you know, last it's been a tough year because last fall, well, last summer I had knee surgery because I ripped some cartilage in there. And then I got blood clots from the knee surgery. And they got in my lungs and damn near died. And then that's why my lungs are kind of weak, you know. And after all that, you know, then in the wintertime I get the flu, and here I am, it's springtime. I haven't been well since last spring. So it's been a rough year, but hopefully this year everything's going to heal up nice, and we'll get my knee rehabbed and everything. I'm gonna go on an anti-inflammation diet, try to get the pain down. So I put on a lot of weight sitting around.
I know the feeling there. That's what I walked past 2025.
My wife has one of those full-length mirrors. Yeah, and I walked past it the other day with no shirt on. I'm like, oh my God. I didn't realize how fat I was until I saw it for myself, you know?
Yeah, that's usually a kick where it hurts for me.
So I got to do something about that, get back in the saddle. Yeah, I got to get back in the woods and be helping people with their property. That's what I love to do.
Absolutely. Well, Steve, thanks for coming on and chatting with us, giving us a ton of information. I'm sure there's got to be a lot to take from this. I took a lot from it. I appreciate it and look forward to chatting with you on the podcast again. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.